folks. And the Ramban wrote some additional comments at the end of the Rambam Sefer, in which he argues with the Rambam at various points. And there are certain mitzvahs that the Ramban includes that the Rambam does not count as a mitzvah. And one of them, this is in the Hasavos HaRamban, at the end of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, is something called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And the basis of this is a pasuk at the end of Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Masai. This is V'yirishtem Osa, V'yishavtem Ba. You shall inherit the land and you shall live in it. The Ramban says this is a mitzvah d'oraisa that is called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. But what's interesting is the Ramban goes on and says that this mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael has four components. In other words, there are four different things this mitzvah is mechayev you to do. The first thing it's mechayev Klal Yisrael to do is there's a mitzvah min haTorah, the Ramban says, to conquer by milchama, if that becomes necessary, any part of Eretz Yisrael that is within the gevulos that are stated in the Torah, meaning any part of Israel that is within the boundaries as defined in the Torah. So those are pretty big boundaries, going all the way to Nahar Pras. You know where Nahar Pras is? Nahar Pras is the Euphrates. The Euphrates River is north of Syria. It goes all the way into Turkey. So we wouldn't be talking about the West Bank. We would be talking about the East Bank, you know, giving back the West Bank. We're talking about conquering the East Bank and conquering a lot of Syria, etc. But that's a mitzvah of Kibush Milchama. And the Ramban makes the point that this mitzvah of Kibush Milchama is not limited to when there's a Beis HaMikdash, or when Mashiach comes, or when there's a Melech. The mitzvah applies B'chol Eis to B'chol Shah, a mitzvah of Kibush Milchama. That is, in fact, that's why he calls it a Milchames Mitzvah. What is the halakha? Right in halakha we talk about Milchames Mitzvah. The Ramban says a Milchames Mitzvah is not only Amalek or the seven nations of Canaan, this is what the Rambam says, rather Milchames Mitzvah is any Milchama to conquer land within the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. That is component number one. Component number two is there is a mitzvah not to leave any part of the land. Even after you conquer it, you don't just leave it a desert. Or there's a mitzvah to cultivate it, to beautify it, to build it up. Either, this could be in many ways, this could be commercially, this could be agriculturally, it could be residentially, but you don't just leave it totally desolate. Now that component, one should realize, one does fulfill even by what you do in Chutz La'aretz. So for example, if you contribute to Jewish National Fund, which plants trees, etc., in this secondary sense, one is also fulfilling Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Every time you pick up garbage from the street, and unfortunately garbage is a little bit of a problem in Yerushalayim, one should actually have kavana that they are fulfilling a part of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael because you are making the land more beautiful. Okay, so that's component number two. Component number three of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is it is forbidden, the Ramban writes, it is forbidden for Jews to regard any other country as the Jewish national home. That when you think about what is the home of the Jewish people, even if you live in America or whatever it is, you have to regard the Jewish national home as Eretz Yisrael. Now this is very significant. It's almost as if the Ramban had a prophecy as to what some Zionist leaders would do. As you know, Herzl had trouble with the Ottoman Empire here, so Herzl was willing to use Uganda as a substitute for Eretz Yisrael. There was even a proposal, I don't know if anyone here is from Texas, but there was a proposal that Galveston, Texas, which at that time was an island, was not connected to the mainland, we would put all the Jews in Galveston, Texas, and that would have been the Jewish national, where people would be speaking Hebrew with a Texan drawl, as it were. And even in Soviet Union, Stalin actually set aside a republic of the Soviet Union to be a Jewish republic. It wasn't Siberia, although Siberia de facto became almost a Jewish republic, but
So the Ramban says, this is us. It's shayach to have yidden living everywhere, but you can't make a country of the Jews other than Eretz Yisrael. So those are three components: conquest, settlement, Jewish national home. The fourth component is the one that is most commonly understood as the Iker Mitzvah according to the Ramban. That is, there's a mitzvah for each individual, I'll call Yachid the Yachid, to establish their residence, to live in the land of Israel. Right? That's, so this concept that there's mitzvah to live in the land of Israel is the Ramban's opinion, but it is the fourth component of a mitzvah that actually has four distinct parts. Okay? And the Ramban again makes the point that it applies in all generations, no matter what. And there are different writers for this. The Gemara very often refers to the great sechus, don't say this correctly, but the great sechus of living in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara talks about the fact that when the rabbis came to Eretz Yisrael, they would kiss the hands. It talks about the fact that if there's a disagreement between a husband and a wife, one wants to make aliyah and the other doesn't. Whichever one wants to make aliyah has a right to force the other one to come along. So it's not only husband can force wife, but according to the Din, wife can force husband. This is a mission. Now, the Ramban argues, if there wouldn't be a mitzvah each of Eretz Yisrael, why should one be able to force the other one? That's not such a good move, because the truth of the matter is, the halakha also applies if one wants to live in Yerushalayim and the other one doesn't. And there's clearly no mitzvah to live in Yerushalayim. So you see, it might be a question of kedusha, not mitzvah, but this is one of the Ramban's proofs. Another proof is a Gemara in Maseches Gittin. Let's assume I want to buy land from a non-Jew. Let's assume there's an Arab that has some land, I want to buy the land. So the halakha is, I can even do it on Shabbos, I can even tell a non-Jew to write up the deed so I can buy the land on Shabbos. You're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do malacha on Shabbos, right? You can't do that. But the Gemara says, the iser of telling a goy to do work on Shabbos is only an iser d'rabbanan. And the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael overrides the iser d'rabbanan, not a d'oraisa, you can't write it yourself, but it overrides the iser d'rabbanan of telling a goy to do malacha. So again, these are a number of the proofs of the Ramban that Isha of Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah min HaTorah. But the answer is, because there's always a fear that maybe if you give the guy time, he may change his mind. So it's so important to try to get that property as soon as possible. It can even violate what would normally be an issue of the law. That would make change his mind. Just like the Gemara says by Shidduchi. The Gemara says, although normally you don't make a wedding during Chol HaMoed, but you're allowed to get engaged during Chol HaMoed. And the reason is because maybe someone else will beat you to it. you try to observe the person when you're able to. You never know what's going to happen. Shevin yichad men la'achid. Okay. Now, it's interesting. You know, last Shabbos when we were together, I'm sure many of you saw, or maybe even davened, in the Beis HaKnesses of the Ramban. You know what that is? That's the under the big Korba arch. And the Ramban himself did make aliyah towards the end of his life. The Ramban came to Eretz Yisrael in his 70s. And the Ramban didn't really come voluntarily. The Ramban was kicked out of Spain. The Ramban lived in Spain. And what happened was, as was common in the Middle Ages, there used to be big public debates with the Catholic Church. And the Ramban had a debate. And in fact, say again? That's right. In fact, it's even been translated in English. The Ramban wrote up a record of the debate, the disputation at Barcelona. And what happened was, at the end of the debate, all of the audience would vote on who won the debate. The Ramban won the debate, but unfortunately that had some bad news. Because if you won the debate and you were Jewish, you embarrassed the Catholic Church, and that was a crime. So the Ramban was expelled from Spain on the charges of embarrassing the Catholic Church by discrediting it. So in his 70s, he had to undertake the very, very, not like they're allowed today, you know, from Spain to Israel is probably a five or six hour plane trip, but then it was weeks and weeks, and actually it was a trip of months over land and over sea, very, very dangerous conditions, wild animals and robbers and bandits. In fact, one of the reasons why the Ramban did not go early, in fact, one way I ask the question, if the Ramban's shita is, Yishev Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah de'oraisa,
you know, why didn't he go earlier?
And the simple answer might be, literally, might have been to Kuach Nefesh in those days to go. And that is why many Rishayim say this with Farish. Many Rishayim say that because of the danger of the trip, which really does not apply today, because of the danger of the trip, there was an exemption of Yishev Eretz Yisrael because of Pikuach Nefesh. But be it as it may, the Ramban was forced to go. And in Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban completed his famous Perush Ala Torah. And what's interesting is, the Ramban even uses archaeology. In other words, there's a machlokas, how heavy is a half shekel coin? Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. And the Ramban points out, after I got to Eretz Yisrael, I bought the half shekel coin from an Arab, and I was able to prove that Rashi was right, and he actually means the archaeology of it. In a very famous letter, the Ramban writes that when he came to Eretz Yisrael, the holier the place, the more desolate and destroyed it was. The Makom HaMikdash was more desolate than Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim was more desolate than the rest of Eretz Yisrael, etc. And you know, if you look at the Kaisel, you know that most of the Kaisel is still below ground today, right? You walk in, you see how low it goes, because the ground was much lower. Right? The Kaisel was, imagine, double the height, simply because the ground was lower. But in the time of the Ramban, most of the Kaisel that's now above ground was below ground. It was used as a garbage heap. So you had like 10 feet of wall. That's how high the garbage heap was. Right? And the Ramban writes that there was not even a minion of Jews in Yerushalayim. That they had to get some Jews from Hebron, and from Akko, and from Sfat, and from some other places. And there was not even something they had to scrounge around. That's how I imagine that's what it was like. And the Beis HaKnesses of the Ramban is the first shul that's still functioning. It's the oldest shul in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, that's still used as a Beis HaKnesses. It's obviously not the original building, as you see, but it is that site that was the Makom of the Beis HaKnesses of the Ramban. So this is the Shitas HaRamban, that there's a mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael. Now the emphasis is, there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, where he argues that even according to the Ramban, Yishev Eretz Yisrael is not a mitzvah chiyuvis, it is only a mitzvah chiyuvis. What are these phrases, chiyuvis and chiyuvis? Mitzvah chiyuvis here means a mitzvah that you must do, right? You must keep kosher, you must keep Shabbos, you don't have a choice. Mitzvah chiyuvis is a mitzvah where if you do it, you have a mitzvah, but it is not something you must do. An example for men would be tzitzis. The Torah says, if you wear a four-cornered garment, you must have tzitzis, but you can decide whether to wear it or not. Meaning, people don't always know this, but the Torah does not say, I have to put on a talus, or I have to put on a beged of dalet kamos. The Torah simply says, if you wear a beged of dalet kamos, you have to have tzitzis. So tzitzis is what is called a mitzvah ki yumis. If I do it, I have a mitzvah, but I'm not obligated to do it. Actually, I'm thinking for women, there really isn't very much of a category of mitzvah ki yumis. You either have to do it. I mean, you could do a mitzvah sasei shesman gerama, but still, that's not a pure mitzvah ki yumis, because the reward for that is like an eino mitzvah b'dosa, but a ki yumis is a mitzvah, but you don't have to do it. But Rav Moshe wants to say that according to the Ramban, Yishev Eretz Yisrael is a ki yumis, not a ki yumis. However, one has to say, although obviously I'm not, I cannot argue with Rav Moshe, but the Lashon of the Ramban is very, very difficult to interpret that way. If you look at the Ramban inside, the language seems to be very, very clear that it is not just a kiyumis. If you do it, you get reward, but it seems to be a real bona fide kiyum, and that is the way the Ramban is understood by virtually all other Mefarshim. However, remember, I haven't yet gotten to the Rambam. I'm only discussing the Ramban right now. However, even according to Ramban, the chiyuv of living in Eretz Yisrael is not absolute. There are circumstances in which even the Ramban would say you don't have to do this mitzvah. And those are the three circumstances that the Gemara enumerates, that a person is allowed to leave the land of Israel, lilmol Torah, to learn Torah. And you might say, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. What do you mean, leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah? There's plenty of Torah you can learn in Eretz Yisrael.
But the answer would be, number one, at various times in history there weren't. For example, in the time of the Ramban himself, there were no yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, so one might legitimately live in Chutz Laaretz to learn Torah.
But even like the Zman Hazeh, where there are a lot of yeshivas and a lot of makamos of Torah, but, you know, if a person has a unique connection with a certain rabbi or a certain teacher, and that is the one that they grow the most spiritually, that is also considered to be a heter of Torah. Lisa Isha, this is directed to the man, but it would also apply to a woman, if to find the shidduch, it would be necessary to go abroad, that would be a heter, Lisa Isha, for a husband to find a wife, for a wife to find a husband. And the third, which is the most misunderstood, is that one can leave Eretz Yisrael in order to make a living, in order to make a parnasa. But here, of course, we have to understand what that means. That certainly doesn't mean that if in Chutz Laaretz I make $100,000, I may have two cars, and in Eretz Yisrael I only make $40,000 and not have a car. So because my standard of living is going to be lower, I'm putter from living in Eretz Yisrael. That avada isn't the case. The Chachamim are talking about basically starvation, meaning if you're not going to make a living wage for your family in Eretz Yisrael, if you'll have to beg, if you really don't have enough for basic necessities, there is an exemption from living in Eretz Yisrael. But merely, this is Rabbanu, merely because there's a reduction in standard of living, the part of that would not be a heter. Obviously, that's what Chazal say when they say Eretz Yisrael is nicknames be Yisurin. Nicknames be Yisurin means that to be zochet to live in Eretz Yisrael, there are always going to be hardships, sometimes economic, emotional, right, financial, many different types of hardships, but that is what happens. Eretz Yisrael Kaka is nicknames be Yisurin. So all of this is the Shitas HaRamban regarding the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, the question is this. The Rambam, my mind is, the Rambam does not count the Yerishtem Osa Yishavtem Ba as one of the 613 mitzvahs. He does not count it as a mitzvah. Now, it can't be because he doesn't consider there to be any zechus of living in Eretz Yisrael, because the truth of the matter is, in the Mishnah Torah, which are the halachas, all of the laws about a husband forcing a wife and a wife forcing a husband, and the halacha that you can tell a goy to write a deed on Shabbos, and the halacha that better to live in Israel, even among goyim than to live in Chutz La'aretz, among religious people, all the things the Rambam brings down. So it's clear that the Rambam is mishabeach, the Rambam praises the greatness of living in the land of Israel, but the point is, he does not count it as a mitzvah. He does not say there is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. In fact, it's very interesting that, you know, the Rambam himself, who was older than the Rambam himself was born in Spain and spent the bulk of his life in Egypt. The Rambam was, in fact, the doctor to the Sultan of Egypt. In fact, all of the Rambam's writing was done part-time at night. The Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah over 10 years at night, and probably after midnight. You know, so it's an amazing thing that the Rambam did. But when the Rambam was young, his family was running from country to country trying to escape Islamic persecution. And when the Rambam was around 12, his family did move to Eretz Yisrael. But they only stayed for less than a year, and then they went to Egypt. For whatever reason, they could not survive in Eretz Yisrael. But the Rambam writes, years later, that the anniversary of his coming to Yerushalayim as a 12-year-old, he celebrated as a yomtiv every year of his life. Every year, that day became a yomtiv in his family. The day that he was zochet to come to Yerushalayim and pray at the Kaiso, which he says, became a yomtiv. And as you know, the Rambam, after his death, was buried in Eretz Yisrael. The kever of the Rambam is in Tiberias, next to Rabbi Akiva and the Ramchal. Those are kind of three famous people who are buried in Tiberias. Sfat has more famous people, but Tiberias has the Rambam. Now, so the question is, what are the implications of the Rambam not counting Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah? So it really depends on your orientation. Some very extreme religious Zionists want to say that, well, the Rambam didn't count it,
because it's clear that this is the foundation of the whole Torah, and therefore the Rambam is not going to count the most important foundation of everything, which is, to me, that's a nonsensical interpretation, simply because the Rambam counts belief in Hashem as a mitzvah, right? So, you know, what are you going to say? The Rambam, you know, living in exile is more important than believing in Hashem. So the simple meaning, as all the Mefarshim learned in the Sefer, this is not the biblical book, but the Sefer HaMitzvah is called Gilas Esther. Don't ask me why, I don't even know why he called it by that name. It probably was, you know, in memory of his mother or something like that. But the Sefer Megillas Esther, which is the standard commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvah, simply learns that according to the Rambam, Maimonides, there is no mitzvah d'oraisa of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's a wonderful thing, it's a tremendous thing, but does not fall within the definition of a mitzvah. And the Megillas Esther says that the proof of the Rambam, is from a well-known Gemara in Kesubas. Now this is an extremely important Gemara, right? Three Shavuos, right? And this is very important because this is the basis of the Turikarta ideology in Satmar, and many people who are against the state, right? And Pasuk is going on the reference to Shir HaShirim, Ishbati Yeskan Benos Yerushalayim, right? The woman in Shir HaShirim turns to the daughters of Jerusalem. We don't know who those daughters are, but it's not entirely clear. In Ta'iru, the in Ta'iruru, do not stir up and do not awaken. Right? Do not stir up and do not awaken Esa'ava, the love, Ad Shetechpas, until it desires to emerge. In other words, Shir HaShirim has this woman, which is Knesset Yisrael, turning to another group of women, saying, do not stir up the love until it's ready. It's a very enigmatic pasuk, and it appears twice exactly that way, and a third time slightly different, but basically almost 99% the same. And the Gemara in Kesubas explains that at the time of the Churban, Hashem made the Jewish people swear that Tishbati Yisken, three oaths. Now, the Mefarshim say this doesn't mean they physically swore. This doesn't mean that, you know, there were people who swore, but it means Hashem imposed an oath upon us. Hashem imposed on the Jewish people three obligations. And the three obligations are, number one, Shelo Yalu Bachom. They shall not climb the walls. And that doesn't mean, you know, when you get bored you feel like climbing the wall. But Lo Yalu Bachom, Rashi says this, they promised Hashem, or they were obligated by God, not to regain the land of Israel by military force. See? And let me just stop there for a moment. That already, the Megillas Esther says, is the proof, not like the Ramban. Because if there would be a mitzvah, remember, what does the Ramban say in the very first definition of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? To conquer the land. Now, if the Torah gave us a mitzvah to conquer, how could a later Shavuah say we're not allowed to conquer? Because what's that law that if you make a Shavuah to violate the Torah, your Shavuah is not binding? If you make a Shavuah, you're going to eat trade. The Shavuah doesn't count. So the Megillas Esther says, I'll finish tomorrow. The very first Shavuah we have a raya that there's no mitzvah to conquer, and of course that's the whole package of Misha, because if there's a mitzvah of Kibush, how could there be a Shavuah not to be published? Okay, but be as it may, that's the first Shavuah, not to conquer Eretz Yisrael by force. The second Shavuah is Lo Yimredu Ba'umos, that Jews promise to be law-abiding citizens of the country that they live in. You don't lead a revolution against your host nation. Now, of course, Jews have violated that oath many times. Many of the Russian Revolution was led largely by Jews, Trotsky and the like. By the way, Leon Trotsky, who was assassinated by an ice pick in the 30s in Mexico,
I understand that he has religious grandchildren who are learning in Kabbalah in Yerushalayim. So, it's very interesting. But the second shmur is Lo Yimridu Ba'umos. And the third, and you'll have to ask Chabad about this because it's a problem. The third shmur is Lo Yidchaku Es Haketz. Do not try to bring Mashiach. Ketz is the end, Mashiach. Do not try to bring Mashiach before the world is ready for it. Meaning to say, you do mitzvot, you learn Torah, you pray to Hashem, but you don't try to do things like kind of force Mashiach come, such as, we want Mashiach to come, like you don't have. Now again, this is the Gemara, and again, it's not necessarily a halakha. The Rambam does not bring, when you know the Rambam brings all the halakhas from the Gemara, the Rambam does not bring this Gemara of three shavuos. The Shulchan Aruch does not bring it. So, there is a respectable position that we don't postulate any of this, right? So you can't take every statement in the Gemara and assume that every single thing, for example, the Ramban may very well not postulate to give a shavuos in the Gemara, because the Ramban says there's a mitzvah of conduct, right? The Gemara shavuos is doing. So this is not necessarily a kasha on Chabad or anything else, but the Gemara does say that the third shavuot is lo yichru was the case. Now because of this Gemara, the Neturei Karta and Satmer said it was halakhically forbidden to establish a state of Israel. Not because it's non-religious. Even if every single person, if you don't believe in Israel, would be shomer mitzvahs. Okay? Even if every single person would keep all of the halakhas, even if the state of Israel would be totally halakhic, it is their position that it is it's a violation of these first shavuot to establish a state until Mashiach comes, because Hashem basically decreed that we remain involved until the coming of Mashiach. Now, as you know, the majority of religious Jews do not accept that. The majority of religious Jews, whether you say Hallel or not, most of you don't say Hallel, that's a separate matter, but almost every, and whether you know you like what the state is doing or not, what you often can criticize, many, many things, but virtually every religious Jew has Hakaras HaTov HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we have the ability to have a country, that Jews can come to this country, that we can do mitzvahs, etc. So to say that the state of Israel is halakhically improper is not a position that is accepted by most religious Jews. And the question is, what do you do about the three shvuos? In other words, isn't the Sefer Hevi right? And there are a number of answers. One answer is focusing on the fact that the state of Israel was legally not created by an act of war. You see, the state of Israel was created by the consent of the nation that was ruling the state of Israel at the time, in Palestine, and that is the Balfour Declaration, issued in the aftermath of World War I, was a reshus by the British government to establish a Jewish homeland. And in 1948, the homeland was recognized by the United Nations resolution. And if, in fact, we did fight a war in 48, that was not a war to establish a state. That was a war to defend ourselves against people that attacked us when the state was proclaimed by the United Nations resolution. Consequently, in fact, it says, I think, B'Shem Chafetz Chaim, that when the Balfour Declaration was issued, Chafetz Chaim, of course, died in 1933, but he was alive, when the Balfour Declaration was issued, he said it was a tremendous simcha, because this now matired the shavua, this absolved us of the oath. Until then, we weren't, we taka wouldn't be allowed to establish a country, but the Balfour Declaration says, we're not establishing the country by rebelling against the nations, we are establishing the country with the haskama of the Ummah. And therefore, the Balfour Declaration is a very important matter, halakhically, in terms of the three shavuos. Now, the Sakri Rebbe would say to that, well, yes, but how did you get the Balfour Declaration? That was by certain Jewish activism, Jewish terrorism, even to some degree. So in a way, you kind of forced them to agree. That would be the machlokes. But there's a second answer to the Gimel Shavuos, and that's from the Meshech Chachma. Actually, it's not in the Sefer, but the Rebbe simply said it. And that is, if you look at the Gemara goes on and says, just like Bnei Yisrael made three oaths, Hashem made the Umos HaOlam. And the fourth oath of the Umos HaOlam is Lo Yishabdu Yisrael Yoser Midari. They will not oppress the Jewish people excessively. In other words, it's kind of a package deal. God tells the Jewish people, don't rebel against the government, don't try to start your own country, live in Golos, accept the reality of Golos until Mashiach comes. But it's on a condition. And the condition is that the Umos HaOlam don't oppress you excessively. Now we know, of course, that the Umos HaOlam is not lived up to that particular promise. Crusades, pogroms, and certainly in this century, the Holocaust. And consequently, Revere Simcha, who was talking before the Holocaust, the Revere Simcha point was, if they did not live up to their Shavua, then we are not included with our Shavua. Because our Shavua is by the contract. Our promise not to rebel is conditioned on their promise not to oppress us. They violated theirs, we are now absolved of ours. However, I want to point out that the Gemara is still a good raya to the Rambam because of the following. Even if we say, either because of the Balfour Declaration or because of the Holocaust, that there's no longer a prohibition against conquering and making a country. Right? So there's no longer an issur. But the Ramban's raya is this, says the Megillah Center. If there would have been a mitzvah to conquer, there couldn't have been a shmur in the first place. Right? So, look, the Shmuel no longer binds us. But the Megillah Sester writes that still a proof that the Eretz Yisrael is not Hazeh is not a field. Now, I want to clarify one thing that might be confusing you a little bit. Technically, the issue of the three Shmuels has nothing to do with living in Israel. I mean, remember, none of the Shmuels in Israel are not going to live in Israel. In fact, the Jewish Bible is in Israel. Okay? The Shavua only applies to rebelling and establishing a state. So you might ask this. How can the Megillah Esther prove from the Gimel Shavuos that there's no mitzvah of Isha Eretz Israel? The Gimel Shavuos only apply to a state. They don't apply to living Israel. But the answer is this. The answer is that the Ramban connects all four points in one mitzvah. The Ramban includes conquering and living. So if you show that there's no mitzvah to conquer because we made a shvuah, then that also means there's no mitzvah of Hisham in its entirety. Simply because the Ramban himself, right? The Ramban says the mitzvah has four parts. And we can show that any one of the parts is not a mitzvah, that means there's no mitzvah. We show it all together. But it's very important to know that there's no position that says we made a shvuah not to live in Israel. So that obviously was not the case.
I'm not sure the history of Kaita, but
Well, you have to keep in mind that until the middle of the 19th century, until around 1870, there was no movement within Klal Yisrael. People were living in Eretz Yisrael, but there was no movement to establish a country, to establish a nation. And consequently, people didn't discuss the issue at all.
That's what I'm asking, like, why?
Yeah, the Sakya response was because as Zionism grew, they were very, very disenchanted with Zionism because they saw the leaders of Zionism largely as people who did not keep mitzvahs. They saw someone like Herzl who was willing to have the whole Jewish people convert to Christianity. In order to get the land, he had to deal with the Pope. He was trying to negotiate with the Pope. He said, if the Pope uses his influence to give the Jewish people Palestine, he will get 10,000 Jews who will convert to Christianity. So, you know, the Sattler was very well aware of a lot of these things, and therefore they saw this as a Maisa Sattler. They really saw this as the Yetzer Hara trying to take Jews away from Torah and instead making them connected to nationalism.
And,
well, it's hard to say it was always there. Well, keep in mind that the Gemara was always there, but it was not used to Paskin Halacha until there was a Shaila that needed to be answered. Like anything else, new Shailas come up in life, genetic engineering, and then you have to go back and find a find a mother. Now, I just want to say that, I'm sorry, did you mention?
You said that
if
the
land
didn't
support that's your bare surface.
But Adam is the role of Noah, then I'm not going to be there, then.
Yep, that's right. That's a very good question. The answer would have to be, effectively, that Abraham's children kept the Shavua in order to avoid Chibur Hashem. The Rambam made the same point by the Yevonim. Remember the book of Yoshua? Yoshua made a promise that the treaty with the Yevonim. Now the Rambam says, if I make a treaty with somebody because I'm the sea, and then I discover that they lied to me, they eat their head in, I wasn't bound by it. But the Rambam says, we count Kiddush Hashem. Sometimes people keep Shavuot they don't have to keep. You are not going to keep Shavuot Hashem if you don't keep your word. But here, the message says, the Holocaust, we're not Holocaust, but all the tragedies, and how we add the Holocaust, is such an enormous corpus of Kali Yisrael that the world understands that they're not that Shavuot. I'm sorry, say again? Now, they made Kiddush they made a brach on the why? They actually made a brach on the
mitzvah.
All right, you know, people are supposed to be misguided. I mean, there's no, now, if someone says, I make challah on Yom HaTzimut, even though most poskim say, you do not say a brach on certain, but if one were to make a brach on, there is at least a halakhic source on which you could be sober, because you could say, listen, we say hallel on Hanukkah, even though Hanukkah is not a Yom Kippur, because it signifies a victory over our enemies, etc. So one might say, although I would not parse this way, one might say, hallel is appropriate. However, Kiddush is only said, I mean, you don't say Kiddush on Kol HaMoed, you don't say Kiddush on Hanukkah, you don't say Kiddush on Purim. Kiddush is only made on a day that you're not allowed to do malacha. Now, if your friend is driving a Yom HaTzimut, then how can you make Kiddush? I mean, Yom HaTzimut is not a Yom Kippur. So, there's a very big difference. If somebody says hallel, I cannot say for sure that they're wrong. I mean, there is a basis in halacha for that position. Kiddush, there's mamish no basis whatsoever. Now, if you want to drink wine, and you want to make a great Yad Rafet in honor of a festive occasion like the Chayos, that's perfectly fine. I think it's also difficult. Now, when it comes to Hanukkah, we don't make Shefiyana because it's Hanukkah. We make Shefiyana only because you're lighting a candle. We need to say, you only make Shefiyana on a Yom Tov or on a special mitzvah. Now, Yom HaTzimut is not a Yom Tov, and there's no special mitzvah. So, you know, you don't make Shefiyana. In other words, the factors that created Shefiyana were not present in those cases. My example would be, you don't make Shefiyana on Hanukkah unless you're writing Hanukkah. In other words, because it's not a Zman, that's also the Mu'adah. So there's no Kedusha for Zman, there is Shefiyana. But okay, but again, people make this. People can carry away from that. Yes, it's very interesting that Yom Yerushalayim, which is on the 8th of the year, I think. Yom Yerushalayim, there are people that say there's more of a reason to say hallel on Yom Yerushalayim. And that makes a lot of sense. Because if you think about it, Yom HaTzimut was not a victory day. Yom HaTzimut, we proclaimed the state, that was the beginning of the war. Yom HaTzimut was the beginning of 1948. So there was no Gerula that day. If anything, maybe you ought to think about saying hallel like a week and a few weeks afterwards, there was an army. Now Yom Yerushalayim, on the other hand, we actually did conquer the city of the old city and the Kosovo. Right? So there is a lead in the MS, more of a swara. Still most would say not, but there is more of a swara for hallel on Yom Yerushalayim than Yom HaTzimut really did not mark me as marking a declaration of independence. But it was not the end of a war, it was the beginning of a war. By Hanukkah, you don't celebrate. The analogy would be, we would make Hanukkah the day the Hashmonaim declared war against the Iran. We don't. We make Hanukkah the day that they were victorious over the Iran, right? But
Yom HaTzimut is the day of the war, it's not the day of the victory. But be this as it may, I just want to say one thing, that whether or not living and conquering Eretz Yisrael, first of all, I want to say that according to the Ramban, the issue of giving up land for peace would be very, very difficult, because according to the Ramban, we are mechuyev to go to war, to conquer territory. So how can we say, in order to avoid war, I'll give back territory? On the other hand, according to the Ramban, since there is no chiyuv of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, one would be allowed, according to the Ramban, to give back territory if, this is the big if of course, if it would result in people's lives being saved. Meaning it would appear that according to the Ramban, Pekuach Nefesh is not a hedger in giving back lands, but according to the Ramban, it is, and it's brought down certainly, that most of the Jewish world, most of the Gedolim that have stayed with Kislev, have always followed the Rambam's view, and therefore, what I'm saying is, no American can get up and say, and an American cannot say, it is forbidden halakhically to give that land, because that's a contradiction. Because if you're an American, you're following Rambam. If you're following Rambam, how can you possibly cancel that land, even for the Jewish government? Now, that doesn't mean that you have to agree to any given proposal. Any given proposal might endanger people's lives. Right? So I'm not saying it's automatically going to save lives. Many people say giving back land creates more people out there. That's a political issue. But all I'm saying is, if you knew with Ruach HaKodesh that Jewish lives would be saved, then according to the Rambam, you would give back land. And indeed, that was the start of most of the Zelda, even in Eretz Yisrael, that territorial concession is permitted, as regretful as it is, if it can be shown there's a Bikulat Nefesh issue. And I just want to end with one final thing, and that is, whether we say there's a mitzvah d'oraisa of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, which is the Ramban's opinion, or whether we say there's no mitzvah d'oraisa of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, unless you go with suffering to a karta, as I said before, all of us are mechuyev to have hacharis hatzeis, and to our Kaddish Baruch Hu for giving us, letting us come back to this very special and holy place. Now, whether that hacharis hatzeis expresses itself in halel, with a bracha, without a bracha, is really not as important as the notion that one should have a hargasha hacharis hatzeis. Maybe it doesn't have to be Yom HaTzimut. It doesn't have to be on that particular day either. Just like Holocaust, like the Holocaust Memorial Day, Yom HaShoah is in the month of Nisan, in which you're not supposed to have mourning. So whether it's that day or that day is not as important to a religious Jew as the fact that we do have to think about the matanos that Hashem has given us, and we have Karas HaTov for that matanos. That's why sometimes when this happens on these issues, it has become so politicized that if you don't say Halal Yom HaShoah, that's because, you know, you're not allowed to express any type of hakaras hatov to be that material. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. One can disagree on certain halakas, but one could be makir the hakaras hatov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also to the government of Israel and to the army of Israel. You know, it's been well said that the government of Israel supports more kollel students than any institution in the world. Right? In the army, whether they're religious or not religious, there are people who are giving their lives. So that there can be a country where Jewish people learn and do mitzvot and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And certainly there's going to be a tremendous schar for them. You know, the Gemara talks about all these bad guys, did one little good thing in their whole life and they get all this reward. Remember Eglon Melech Moab, right? The big fat king of Moab. So he stood up when Eglon Ben Gera comes, right, and gives him a message. I have a message from Hashem. So this guy gets up and he walks three steps forward and the knife gets stuck in his belly and the knife is submerged and he dies. And like that's the only good thing he ever did. And Chazal said, in the merit of the fact that he took three steps forward in honor of Hashem, he was zocheh that his daughter Rus married into Kol Yisrael. And not only that, but she was the great-grandmother of David HaMelech and the ancestor of Moshiach. That Hashem gives tremendous reward for one little bit that a person does. So if you think about this, even though Eglon is an Obed on Bodhisattva, if you think about that, all of the Mesilas Nefesh that people do,
to defend Eretz Israel, to pick up the garbage, whatever it is, to deliver the mail. All of these things are zechusim. And if they are zechusim, then a person is a mind and belief that the Kodesh Baruch Hu rewards those zechusim, and they count. Now, Rav Kook used to say, Rav Kook was, of course, many Rav Kook was overly romantic in some ways in his Avas Yisrael, but Rav Kook used to say that he saw the Zionist movement, even the secular Zionist movement, as really being spiritual, meaning there were people who were not religious, people who weren't learning Torah, people who weren't keeping mitzvahs, but Hashem wanted them to come back to him one way or the other. And how would they come back? They wouldn't go to Eishet Torah, right? They wouldn't go to Eretz Yisrael. There was no Eishet Torah, Eretz Yisrael then. They wouldn't have anything to do with Judaism. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates this nationalistic movement, which gives them a way to identify the Eretz Yisrael, not in the status of Torah. And what Cook said, however, that once they come to the land, the Kedusha of the land is going to be mashpia on their souls. Now, Rav Kook, I think, may have thought it would happen in that first generation. Now, we know that to a large degree that's not true. But that doesn't mean it's not going to happen eventually. It's not to them, to their sons, to their grandsons, to their great-grandsons. And Rav Kook writes, some people come to Eretz Yisrael because of their connection to Hashem, and some people come to Hashem through their connection to Eretz Yisrael. And some people will be connected to Eretz Yisrael not through a spiritual reason, but that's going to bring that to Hashem. And so the way we understood, even secular Zionism, was it was Hashem's to bring all of the Jewish people back to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. And those who are very far away from that needed a secular way of connecting. A secular way of connecting is not the land. But he said the holiness of the land is such that it
the holiday is the Parsha of the Mordechai. You have a Vayikra?
Yes.
Vayikra right here? Well, God is always, there you go. Holiday is Pesach. And that's real good holidays. That was very much. They have Israel. That's next holiday, right? And the Chodesh Rishon, Chodesh Bein Ha'Abayim, Pesach LaHashem. The 14th, you bring the Korban Pesach. Only Israel says Yom Chodesh is there. Chag Matzah LaHashem. She was Yom Matzah Tochelu. Next 7 days, only eat matzahs. The first day will be a Yantif. The last day will be a Yantif, and that's it. That's a great holiday. Now here's the next holiday. Here's the next holiday. On the second day, you will go and cut the new grain from the barley. That means you're going to raise your success, and you'll bring it to the Kohen. And he will wave it. And he will bring with it different things. So here's the whole waving. Let him cut the color of the caramel. That was a carbon out of the kechem. Do not eat any of the new grain until you bring this. So this is the whole second holiday. It's called on the second day of Yom Kippur. You will bring the new grain. That's the holiday. You'll bring this new offering. Of course, it's a little difficult to do because the barley is rougher than wheat. It does not grind as well. Plus, it's fresh. It's still wet, so they have to roast it and then grind it, and they have to sift it 13 times in order to be able to get it. Start with an omer amount of this. And when you're all done with this, you have to be able to make this carbon out of it. And sometimes it's barley enough. But in any event, that's the second holiday. Here's the third holiday. Then you'll count 7 complete weeks. The end of that 7th week, you'll count 50 days. And on that 50th day, which is Shavuos, you'll bring a new mincha, korban mincha to Hashem. By the way, what is the significance of that 50th day, Shavuos? Torah, right? No mention. There's no holiday mentioned here. There's no Shavuos mentioned here. There's no Matan Torah mentioned here. All we're told is, from the time you brought that barley offering, then you'll count 7 weeks. And on the 50th day, you'll bring a wheat offering. We'll make two loaves of bread, chametz tafena. This is the only bread that you're making that is chametz. Yes, ma'am? That's so interesting. What does it tell us about the holidays of Bamidbar? Korban and Musaf, Parshas Pinchas. The Shorosh Regalim are mentioned both in Mishpatim and Kisisa, but not telling us about what they are, only telling us about their agricultural manifestations. Yeah. But then we actually have a holiday called Chag HaShavuos, which is also a pretty weird name. What does Chag HaShavuos mean?
Nope.
Yeah, holiday of weeks. Are you going to That's what anybody should typically call the 50th day. This is where I become a feminist. You know what the Christian name is for Shavuos? Don't talk anymore. You have to leave. Anyone else? Pentecost. So you see those Pentecostal things? Yeah. Pentecost is like the 50th day, right? The 50th day. There's a circus of tabernacles, and Pesach is Easter, and Shavuos is Pentecost, the 50th. It makes sense. We don't call it the 50th, we call it weeks. You don't want to hear this again. We're not even told the weeks part. All we're told is, count 7 weeks from the time you bring your barley offering, and on the 50th day, you'll bring these two loaves of bread. That's the end of the holiday. That's it. Now we move on to the next holiday, which is Shana. This is a strange holiday. And this is particularly significant to us because obviously we're in this time of the year and it is in Parshas Amor, and so therefore it behooves us to have some understanding about what this holiday called counting the 7 weeks are up until you bring a wheat offering. Parenthetically, there's another interesting thing, and that is these two loaves of bread are chametz. These are the only ones that are brought that are chametz. The only public korban, public offering that's brought that's chametz. There is perhaps one other that's chametz. There's one other korban that has chametz in it. Right. You know that one? Wow, good. Yes, one other. Oh, no, that's not true. Right. So this is the only one that is public that's chametz. And there's another one that is something unusual. Right? Oh, so let's read the passage here. This is back in Vayikra. Beizur Aleph, Kohan Mincha Shetakiru Hashem will say, Oseh chametz. Every mincha that you bring cannot be chametz, ki chol sa'ar v'chol dvash v'satir mele isha Hashem. Because all chametz and all honey you can't bring. Yeah? That's a mitzvah. Kon reishis takrivo sam la'ashem. Al-mizbech o'yayu rechichach, kol kon minchos sech v'lech timloch, etc. In takriv minchas bikur la'ashem, avim kol v'eish gerish kaimu takriv minchas bikurecho, etc. v'shemim, shamta, etc. etc. There's only two exceptions, rations, that you're allowed to bring of chametz and dvash. What can you bring of chametz? Korban Torah. I have not Korban Torah. The shereh. What can you bring of dvash? When can you bring dvash? No. That's right, Clancy. It's honey. Honey and tamarim, right? The tamarim, when they think about honey, the tamarim, they're referring to like date honey and fig honey. Right? So, those are the honey that gets brought to the base of Midrash. Interestingly enough, you're never allowed to bring chametz and dvash to the base of Midrash except on Shavuos. Isn't that interesting? So, why? So, Parshas, it says these are the first. Korban Reishis, Takrivo Hashem. These are the first.
And therefore, you know how you start a little kid off learning? I saw this, as during my Shalom once, I saw his father doing this. He has his little child grasping his collar, so he shouldn't see anything coming before he gets into the world of Torah. And they bring him into his little cheder, they sit down in a little chair, might be a big chair, no idea. And there's an Aleph-based book, and there's a little honey on the page that says, this is an Aleph. Or it does this, but it says, this is an Aleph. Is that? Aleph. Is that? He licked the honey. This is the base. Right? Lick the honey. That's how you start a prayer. Prayer should be something sweet. Yeah? So we start off. This is the first one we bring. The first fruits are sweet. But why can't you have chametz and honey in the base of Mikdash? But what does chametz represent? Can't even do this, right? There you go. Gaiva. You take a nice fat matzah and you inflate it. Turn it into a white bread. Yeah? And then you squish it back down into a matzah, which some people do with their challah. I'm not going to do this. No, no, please. This is not done in any fashion. I see people playing with their challah and squish it into a little thing. I don't know. Anyway, but it is done, suffice it to say. You can make a bag into a matzah. Right? It automatically, it artificially inflates it. Yeah?